it's something that Billy Donovan kind of pushed for last season, that they want Westbrook rebounding the ball because they see that as some as their one of their best chances to turn defense into offense. You cut out the middleman, you don't have to throw an outlet pass, he rebounds and you're off to the races. So, you know, I think that a lot of people see this as Westbrook's just, you know, rebound hunting and trying to pull him in, and maybe his teammates are doing it. But I think there's also a portion of it that's by design, because it's in the best interest of the Thunder to get the ball into Westbrook's hands as quick as possible.
Last time I recorded with Andrew.
Yeah.
It was akin to feeling terrible because I felt like a kid who got beat up and then someone stole their holographic Charizard. And then I came around and like kicked them while they were down and also took their Venusaur, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I think this Thunder team is going to implode and it's going to be really bad, like 25 wins bad, right?
Yeah.
And there weren't a lot of things that I was more confident about than the Thunder imploding. And it makes sense that they didn't now with, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You could sort of see why. I mean, the main reason is that Russ is amazing, right? Like, that's reason number one. And I knew that. I just thought it wasn't going to work. Yeah, I mean, I don't get everything right. I just, like, I've been profoundly wrong twice this year on nailing predictions, and the Timberwolves was the other one.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was super wrong about was the OKC Thunder. First, I should introduce my guest, right? Luke Stevens of the Down to Dunk podcast.
Yes, hello.
The Down to Dunk podcast, for everyone out there who's listening, is absolutely wonderful, and as many of you know, I've been setting up the A-Team on ABPN, and it's team-specific podcasts. A for Almighty, team, because each team is, you know, covered by each A-Team podcast. And I was deliriously tired the other day listening to Down to Dunk and hearing you guys argue over Thin Lizzies and small babies and just, like, completely losing it, laughing. And I just didn't know I had it in me. Like, I was like in a half delirious state. It was the craziest thing.
Well, that's good.
Anyways, they're great. Go subscribe. They're great.
Now, we have to kind of give people a warning if they haven't heard before. We are, you know, we are homers completely.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that's kind of what you're signing up for when you listen to us. I feel like it's four guys that get together because they love to thunder and are ready to overrate and massively overreact to everything that happens with them. But we're about to have, I think next week is our 300th episode.
Yeah.
Which is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, no. And I mean, that's what we're all about. I mean, actually, each of the A-Team podcasts are pretty much in a similar situation. It'll be great. But
yeah.
Anyways, we can come back to that later. Okay. Yeah, I mean, 300 episodes, so clearly they're doing something right. And clearly the Thunder are doing something right. So I guess, you know, we should start where this team starts. I think this team begins and ends and lives and dies with Russell Westbrook, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is the de facto leader, best player. There's no question about it. And he's doing, I mean, in the month of December, just historically great, and it has been fun to watch.
Yeah. You know, I don't normally use the word hater. You know, I think it's a little contrived, but I mean, how do you describe someone who's picking apart, oh yeah, he's averaging a triple double, but I don't know, that Oscar Robertson guy in this dang new game with all the fast paced 3-point shooting, you know what I mean? Like, just appreciate greatness. I mean,
yeah.
Like, I don't swarm to the word hater, but what else do you call it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just someone who hates having fun. Like, what we have right now is just a player who is doing outrageous things on a basketball court, night in and night out. And it kind of was like last season around the playoffs, one of the last games that we had where we still had Durant. I just had to sit there and not – I tell myself, I'm not going to freak out about this game. Like, I get to watch this – like this great basketball team that's in Oklahoma City representing my city, something I never thought would be happening. Like, I'm going to enjoy this no matter how the game goes. And so that's kind of what I've decided to do with Westbrook. I was like, I just want to enjoy having him and him representing Oklahoma City. Because before, we'd always freak out because there was good Russ and bad Russ. But now I've just resigned myself to the fact, like, this is who this guy is. And what he is a great, great basketball player. That, and, you know, to get that, you kind of have to accept all the things that go into his game, which, you know, sometimes is an ill-advised three, but you just got to love it. That's what I've decided.
I mean, that was sort of my issue. I mean, going into the season, the way I imagined things breaking down was, okay, there's going to be significantly limited spacing, and a player who was inefficient was going to be even more inefficient and take even worse shots because there wasn't anyone creating gravity for him. Of the caliber of Kevin Durant. And then on top of that, since you don't have the good spacing, he would get, you know, increasingly prone to the mid-range pull-up, which, I mean, in fourth quarters, he still has a tendency towards, but he's just hitting him now. And that's a big part of it. I mean, just like the word hater, my brain sort of rejects the idea that okay, in the absence of an explanation, it's like grit or heart or hustle, blood, sweat, and tears. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like the idea of that existing, but I mean, it has to be a thing in this instance, because, I mean, he's doing this, I think, through sheer force of will. I mean, what's your take on that?
I agree that that's a little bit of – there's a little bit of an X factor to Russell Westbrook, and that it is that thing that you can't define, the grit, you know, the hustle, whatever you want to call it. Whatever it is, he has a lot of it. and he's been showing that. And the other thing that's been interesting to see this season is that because Durant, when Durant was there, he not only took a lot of the gravity off Russell as far as on the court, he also did that off the court with, you know, reporters, and Russell could kind of lock himself away and not have to deal with reporters and questions. He could kind of brush those off and not have to deal with them. And this season, he doesn't have that. And I feel like he's been nicer to reporters. He's been answering tougher questions. He's been kind of the focal point, and has, and it's made him easier to enjoy. Like the day that he re-signed with Oklahoma City, he had that big, you know, press conference outside where they play. And ever since then, it's like he's kind of been a different person off the court, I feel like. And it's been really, really a nice thing to see.
Yeah. I mean, and so this Thunder team, clearly not as talented, clearly doesn't have the ceiling. There was a point at which it looked like the finals was going to be a Thunder versus Cavs matchup. And then things sort of fell apart. And whether or not that was indicative of, you know, sort of like a rotten core in this apple, I'm not willing to go that far. But I think this team has soul in a way that it didn't have last year. And again, I tend to I came into the game sort of on the analytics side, and as typically happens, gain knowledge about the game, you drift towards wherever you put too much faith, right? But, you know, I mean, over the course, this Thunder team to me has been another one of those road marks, right? Another one of those signs like, hey, this is more than just X's and O's, synergy and all of that. Because, I mean, there's clearly, and the Lakers are another team like that, the Lakers have a ton of personality. The Thunder have a ton of personality. Like, they're both teams that are, I think, overperforming their talent, but they're both top five in, you know, this heart indeterminable quality that we're talking about. And they're just, you know, they're a lot more fun for me anyways to watch than they were last year personally.
I think so too. And I think a lot of that is because last year the team had so much expectation. They were supposed to be this, you know, they were playing to win everything. And so it's been easier to enjoy the basketball this year because we don't have that same expectation. I at the beginning didn't really know what to expect. And so like in that same way, like our best trade chip in theory is Enes Kanter. And I understand that and why that is, but for me, I would rather keep him on the team and us be worse than we could be than trade for someone, you know, who, I don't even know who, but trade for someone and lose someone who fits this team so well from just a personality standpoint. I've really liked Enes. I mean, his, I don't know if you've seen him on Twitter. He's great.
Yeah, he's awesome.
A great Twitter follower. And he just, the stuff he's done for the city and does for the city and the way he represents us, I think, you know, he's a perfect, like, quote unquote, Thunder guy. And I appreciate that. And I think that now, this year, our fan base can appreciate that too, because there's less, you know, we've got to win, do whatever we've got to do to win. Well, people forget that they're people and that there's, you know, they're people and that like there's just more to it than how they play basketball. And for that is one of the reasons why I would prefer to keep Enes Kanter on this team, just because he fits us so well from a personality standpoint. Even though he could be this, you know, if we were good at trade, he would probably be in the trade. I'd rather be worse and keep him around because of what he does for the city.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll discuss that in a little bit because I agree with you, but I do think that there's a tipping point. I mean, no matter how fun a guy is, there has to be a Godfather offer. You know, if it was like Boogie straight up for Enes Kanter, I would imagine that you would change your tune. But, I mean, in principle, I definitely understand. And I mean, I'm from Dallas, right? And right now, I mean, I'm cool with Dirk being around, even though, I mean, really, we can't improve until we move on from the Dirk era.
Yeah.
Just because like that, I mean, that's sort of the beating heart of the team. And I mean, his absence this year has been why it's like complete agony watching a Mavs game. You know what I mean? Like, I not even from a fan perspective, like, oh, my team is losing, but just like, it's not good basketball. And, you know, I was going to say like another interesting thing that's happened with the Thunder that I think has made it a lot more enjoyable is there's a couple of switches that had to be flipped for this team to still perform. So I think the first one is that everyone has to put in full defensive effort and toe the line, so to speak, on defense, or this whole thing falls apart. And I mean, in terms of defensive rating, you guys were like first, second, third in the league for a while. I think that's fallen largely because of schedule. But I mean, you can just watch and watching that Thunder Rockets game last night, you guys basically from an offense perspective had no business being in that game. But I mean, every hustle play and every defensive advantage that you guys could scrape out of the bottom of the barrel, you jumped all over. And I think that that's part of this identity thing that you were talking about. Like, that's the type of player that Russell Westbrook is, right? And now that he is the sole figure for the Thunder, like you said, it sort of has an identity, and that's what it is. It's like squeezing every little bit out of any given possession, as opposed to just sort of using your talent as a blunt weapon, which is, I think, especially during the Scott Brooks era, that was a big criticism, is that they just tried to out-talent people but didn't really play good basketball.
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference between Scott Brooks and Billy Donovan is Scott Brooks was he was going to give everyone, like, he decided before the game how many minutes everyone would get, when those minutes would be divided, and he wouldn't deviate from that, irregardless of how the game was going. Game was going, we're playing great. You know, let's say there's a player that was playing awesome against this particular matchup. Once it hit, you know, the 9-minute mark, he would pull him, he would put it in the second person. And he would do that even if we were losing the game, and say that there's a huge mismatch and someone's getting eaten alive out there.
Are you talking about Kendrick?
Well, a lot of times eventually it became him. Yes, it became Kendrick Perkins. And it took him, you know, it would take him forever, because the way he coached basketball, it was like reading sheet music. He would do the things when he said they would happen. And with Billy Donovan, it's a whole more like jazz. Like, he's going to react to those things. The second that he sees someone getting eaten alive on defense, he's going to pull him out and do something else. The second that he sees someone that is a mismatch and is playing out of their mind, he's going to keep them in. And that is what a lot of Thunder, like, fans were wanting during the Scott Brooks era. And so now it's a whole lot better, and it's refreshing to see it now. And, you know, I think Scott Brooks is a good coach. I think he is a player's coach and that guys really like him. But I prefer Billy Donovan so much more, just because of that ability to react, which we didn't have before.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was saying as far as, like, using talent as a blunt weapon, right? Like, yeah. You have a big club and you're just trying to sort of repetitively, like, beat your opponent into a pulp with, like, one attack, like, one way of going about it. Whereas, you know, if you're going with finesse, if you're, like, basically fencing with the opponent's coach, I mean, you have to use lineup flexibility. You know, have to move people up and down. Some nights, Enes Kanter plays 30 minutes alongside Adam. Sometimes he can barely get on the court.
Yeah.
I think you guys, for example, with the Enes Kanter thing, you moved Enes Kanter and got a player in return with Grant, who, I mean, has, especially defensively, this ability to play all these different roles. And then offensively, I mean, Enes Kanter has to be a four, and that is limiting. And I think that's part of the lack of intrigue, I think, in the past with the Thunder. It's been that, like, all these players that you were selecting to be role players to fit around Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were all so one-dimensional. It was like, okay, we need this thing, so let's get this type of player. And then you would just sort of plug that hole and another one would appear, because it's like, well, Andre Roberson plays great defense, but he doesn't shoot well from three. And Morrow shoots well from three, but he doesn't play defense. And then, you know, so on and so forth, right? And then Ibaka, yeah. I think you guys recently talked about it. I mean, Ibaka is sort of one of those players, because it's like, does not have a subtle offensive game. It's like he gets the ball and he's going to shoot it. He was one of the worst passers in the league for his entire career, right? But, you know, he played great defense and he shot well. But then it's like the Thunder didn't have complete players, and now their talent level is down, but their versatility is so increased that I think that maybe you give Scott Brooks a little bit of a pass, because I just think that his tool set was a lot more limited than Billy Donovan's was in that regard. Although, you know, even in instances, I think, where he could have been creative, he's showed that he didn't want to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know how to grade Scott Brooks looking back, because he was great for us. We had a lot of success. But, you know, I just think that with, I don't know, because it's hard to say, like, oh, if you plug this coach in, he would have won with that group of people because it's hard to it's just impossible for me to figure out how that would work. But I liked him a lot. Scott Brooks, he was a good players coach, and I think for the young group of guys that we had, he was perfect for that time. But as they got to the point where it's like, okay, these guys are now in their primes, it's time to win, I don't think we could have done it with Scott Brooks. It would have just been the same, you know, problem that we had. You know, it's the end of a game and he doesn't have a play. He just says, Durant, go out there, get the ball to Durant and shoot it, you know?
Yeah.
And with Donovan, it's just been a whole lot more, like I feel like at the end of a game, there's going to be a play that he draws up, you know, for someone like Morrow or something like that. Now, whether the team can make that happen, sometimes they do, sometimes they do not. But in that when cases when it doesn't, he does have Russell Westbrook to fall back on to make great things happen. So
yeah, and it's weird. I think Russell Westbrook is sort of a mix of these two stylistic options. Where I mean, he's a total battering ram, but I think the way that they're using that, and by there I mean Billy Donovan, it's really creative. I mean, in the particular things that he does, but I think the thing with a coach like Scott Brooks is that there are these two spectrums that a coach can land on, you know, with one side being like the tactician and the other side being the wartime coach. So Monty Williams and Scott Brooks are these two guys who sort of have a limited strategic ability in terms of what they're going to do on the court that's creative. But you have a higher floor because your guys at least are going to try, right? And then Alvin Gentry is the opposite side of that spectrum where, I mean, he's a good coach and he can coach them from an X's and O's perspective into wins. And I think that, you know, a wartime coach, you know, that Billy Donovan, that Monty Williams, I think that can only take you so far. You know, I think that's the wall that the Avery Johnson Mavericks ran into before they replaced him with Rick Carlisle. And I think that Billy Donovan and Rick Carlisle are similar in that regard where it's like, well, I mean, everyone was happy with Avery Johnson. That's not why he was replaced, though. It was because he didn't know how to respond and be flexible in the face of this Warriors team that beat them in the first round despite being not as good of a team.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It's just I so much prefer what we have now.
Oh yeah, no.
Especially I'm with saying however,
that once you get to a certain point, you sort of have to leave the training wheels behind, I guess.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I think, but I just don't know. Yeah, for I agree with you. I think. Sorry.
I mean, it fluctuates all over the place. Like, I think Steve Kerr is both. But, you know, it's just sort of two sides of the spectrum. But I really want to get into these specific tools that, you know, the Thunder are utilizing, the skill sets that these players have out there and how they sort of synergize with one another. Starting with Russell Westbrook, because, I mean, I feel like that's where you have to start. I think that, you know, we should touch on a couple of the things that I think that from a non-Thunder fan's perspective, you may not catch if you're just, you know, watching them whenever they happen to be in town. So, you know, one thing that's been touched on a lot is, you know, the difference between Russell Westbrook's uncontested rebounds being stat padding versus it being, you know, an avenue through which he can just take it down the court himself and initiate a really high efficiency fast break, right?
Yeah. I think that I don't buy into Russ padding his stats. I think that's kind of an outdated thing that like at least this season hasn't really been happening. I like he's been making his teammates better this season. And whether that is through his assists or through him getting a rebound and immediately starting the offense down the floor. I think, you know, what he's I can't even really critique what he's doing this year because he's performing at such a high level. If he's grabbing a ton of rebounds, I don't think that's to the detriment of and some of his teammates. Before in past seasons, I saw that a little bit more, but this season, I don't really think he is. I mean, I've been really happy with his playing. Like, he's by far the best, and so I think any critique, it's like trying to find kind of looking for a problem.
Yeah.
Just because you have to. Because if they're, you know, his pros and cons, like his pro list is so long, he's like, well, he has to have these cons. Well, I think that's kind of reaching for something just to pad out his con list, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's not a worthwhile exercise. And also, I feel like it's not necessarily mutually exclusive. I think the bottom line is that regardless of whether or not he likes it, that he's averaging triple doubles. I mean, my sense is that he does. It would be hard for him not to, if you get what I mean. But regardless of whether or not, you know, it's like you can't have the argument, well, would he do this if it was detrimental to the team? Because the reality is it's not. I mean, every time he grabs one of those uncontested rebounds, right? What's happening is that, okay, we don't play a lot of tweeners at the four. So we have two big men who could box out and are basically going to be useless in transition. So they box out the big guys. Russell Westbrook is bigger than the average point guard, so he gets the rebound, right? I mean, that makes sense. It's just like more inefficient for Enes Kanter to get it and then look for Russell. And then by now, the defense is, you know, halfway down the court, right?
Yeah.
You know, if Russell Westbrook gets the rebound after they box out, he's going to rebound over whatever point guard that's there. I mean, even for how good Adams is, there are centers who are also huge people. But I think Russell Westbrook might be, you know, Russell Westbrook is almost undeniably the best rebounding guard in the league.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're just creating these rebounding mismatches when you leave it up to Russell to do it and just box out everyone else, where, I mean, their offense flows based on rebounding and their defense sort of flows on it too. And, you know, their rebounding rates are just really, really great. And that's something that they've sort of utilized as their advantage because, you know, they sort of have to.
Yeah. The rebound numbers are up. I think what I'm looking at right now is correct, they're fourth in the league in total rebounds. And it's good in partly because of Russ. Now I agree that he's aware that he's averaging, you know, a triple double this month. He knows it, and there will be a point, you know, if he's, you know, it's the fourth quarter and he needs that, you know, 10th assist, he's going to actively look for it. But so far, that hasn't been an issue. You know, if he's trying, he's going to lurk for rebounds eventually. But so far, it hasn't been to the point where it's been a detriment, which has been good.
Well, yeah. And I think what ends up happening with the Thunder is that I think he's doing that assist hunting early on in the game. I think quarters 1, 2, and 3, he's pretty much always looking for the assist. And again, it's sort of pointless to argue about whether it's for his ego or it's for the team, because the end result is the same. It's good for the team for him to be doing it, right? I mean, there's a Kevin Durant-shaped offensive creation hole in the team. So, I mean, his 45% usage rate is something that just has to be there because he's doing his thing and Kevin's thing at the same time.
Yeah.
So if he's the only person who can create offense on this elite level, and then, you know, you have a bunch of guys who are, I think, probably a little bit below average. Actually, I mean, the Thunder are probably one of the worst shooting teams in the league. I know statistically that hasn't borne itself out this year, but I think once you get down to it, you know, once everything averages out, they probably are going to come back to earth a little bit and settle in the bottom 10.
Yeah, and I do think that there's definitely a trade coming at some point to alleviate that shooting problem. I mean, this so far this season, Campaign hasn't played. He's a pretty good shooter. And I think that there's a trade. I mean, they definitely know that. And that is something that they need to fix. So that doesn't surprise me that you say that. But I think that at some point, and it might not be this season, you know, it might be this next summer, it might be into next season, but there's a trade eventually coming to fix that.
Can you send me your trade machine drop?
I actually don't have it, but I can get it from Andrew and I can have him send it to you.
Okay, so that's what would happen right now.
Let's make some trade calls. Take this man to the trade machine.
So like, boom, drop. Awesome. Great. Go listen to Down to Dunk podcast to hear more great drops. Their top five power rankings drop is also great. But so let's peek into the trade machine a little bit. I mean,
okay,
there's all sorts of stuff that's been floating around because, yeah, I mean, when you lose someone big in free agency, especially someone who you don't expect to lose in free agency, that's kind of rough and it leaves big holes in your talent. And like I said, I think they made some good moves, you know, with limited value though, because you can only get so much for Ersan Ilyasova. So starting with top end talent, I mean, what are you looking for? Because I think that, you know, this Thunder team is only going to get so far with minor tweaks. And, you know, I think I maybe trust Sam Presti to do those minor tweaks, but in the end, I think it's going to be really important to just get like a better guy, you know?
Yeah. And I think Presti has, you know, traditionally been really good about that. Like his Serge Ibaka trade,
that was,
I think, God, is going to be like looked at as just highway robbery eventually. I mean, pretty much already it is.
I think Oladipo is going to be like first, second, third team all NBA defense. I mean, and then be like a 20 points per game type of guy. I think he's going to be really good.
Yeah,
that was stupid as hell.
Yeah, but I don't know how, you know, it's something that I didn't really see coming and I don't think anyone else did. And so I trust Presti implicitly to do that because, you know, not a lot of his trades, disappoint me, which is, you know, why he gets paid the big bucks to do it. And I get paid no bucks to do it.
Well, so you know what I think? I think what might be worthwhile is moving on from Steven Adams while his value is so high. And look, I mean, he was killing people. He was killing Capella the other night.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you don't know what Steven Adams you're going to get on any given night in a weirder way than the normal, well, I had a hot night or I had a cold night. Like, he is a different player, you know, when he's good or bad. Like, he does different things. Like, he pulls out that hook shot, you know, he can sort of, you know, not quite off the dribble, but use his footwork to score from like 12 feet out instead of just only operating within a couple feet of the rim. I mean, he's a totally different player when he's on like that. But I think that, you know, people last year, because it happened to be in the playoffs when he was performing like that, right now are super high on Adams. And it's troublesome to me personally that he doesn't do that consistently. It raises eyebrows. But I mean, I know Thunder fans are just like in love with him.
Yeah, I don't see us trading for him. I see him being part of the team for a really long time. Just because if you trade for him, basically, the thing about Steven Adams is it seems like he's here for the long haul. And when you have a small market team, it's harder to find guys with the personality that they'll stay here for the long haul. I mean, we thought we had that with Durant, and it ended up that we didn't. So even sometimes when you think you do, you don't. And I think that with Adams, he fits, his personality fits this city and this team so well that I don't see us ever trading him. I really don't. I see him being, plus he's the kind of player that we were looking for so long that they wanted, you know, even back when before they were willing to put Kendrick Perkins in that spot because they just needed something like that. I think that's what we have. I don't see us trading him, but you know, you never know. There might be a blockbuster trade waiting to happen.
No, I mean, that would be awful. Yeah. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate. Like, he's so important to the Thunder. And you know, like I said, I have some questions about whether or not he's as good as Thunder fans think he is on court, but like off court, he's the best. Absolutely. I mean, the Thunder would be
the best.
Not nearly as great. In terms, they wouldn't just be as fun, you know. They wouldn't.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have like the character. I would be less inclined to like, you know, if I have three games to watch in a given night, I would be less inclined to watch the Thunder, you know, if he were gone. So, yeah. I mean, you know, from the business side of it, but also from like the locker room chemistry side of it, it would be a big mistake, I think.
Yeah. I think so too.
But Inez Kanter, on the other hand, I get the whole Mustache Bros thing. That's awesome and great. I feel like if you make the decision to hold on to him, though, it's got to be because, well, I mean, he's at an all-time low value because everyone saw the Jahlil Okafor thing happen, and it's like this is not a play style that's in vogue. You got to sort of wait till, you know, the pendulum swings the other direction.
Yeah.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, though. Is he as vital? I know you said earlier that you wouldn't want to get rid of Inez Kanter, but if you're agreeing with me that something big needs to happen for them to take another step, the Thunder just don't have a lot of valuable trade pieces, then, I mean, it has to be Inez Kanter, right?
Yeah, I think that you're correct in that if there's a big trade, he will be involved. But... you know, I would want it to be just a huge, huge trade that makes us significantly better. You know, I would hate to trade Ennis away and then get a player back and we're kind of still sitting around the same, you know, spot. Just because I like him.
Yeah.
And he fits really well with our culture, but I do think that I mean, I've prepared myself. He's probably going to be involved in a trade at some point. I do like him a lot.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So as far as specific examples of potential moves, I mean, what do you have in mind? I think that there's, you know, two possible ways that you could go with this. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the two big pieces that the Thunder should go for in terms of, you know, the type of player that they should target, a tweener wing who can spread the floor around Steven Adams, Russell Westbrook pick and rolls, and then a wing, someone to play at the three who can create offense. Do you agree that those are the two roles Yes. that you should be looking to fill? Those are the Yes. biggest and needs?
I think it would be a three that can create offense and really just can shoot. A good shooter that's going to draw people like in the same idea that like a Kevin Durant, which is what we had. Because that is what I would think about. I'm not very good at the trade machine, so I'm poking around on it right now. A person who I would love to have and I think would make this team immediately better, which is, you know, pretty obvious, and I think is pretty unhappy on his current team, is Carmelo Anthony. I would love, he would take us straight to like He would make us so great. But he has no trade clause. I know he's not happy, but he's such a big market guy. I just never see it happening.
Rudy Gay is the obvious answer.
Rudy Gay is the answer that people throw around, but I don't think that he's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, no one thinks Rudy Gay is the answer.
I know, but why? I know, but that's why I don't want him. I don't want us to do it. And I know that, you know, people say that we're interested and we're thinking about it, but I just don't. Part of me hopes that's not true, because I don't, you know, he's bounced around the league so much, and that's just what he does. He bounces around the league, and he doesn't make teams that much significantly better.
Yeah.
So I just don't know if it's something we would do.
Yeah, I don't think that's the answer either.
I know, but you know, it's out there, and I don't know. Part of me questions, like, why it's out there. Is it his? The person.
Well, he demanded. He said he wasn't going to re-sign.
Well, I know that, but he. So I just don't know, and it makes me think, like, is he going to re-sign in Oklahoma City? Like, I don't know that, and I don't think we should give up somebody unless they're willing to sign. But I think if he makes it into free agency, I don't think there's a way in the world he's coming to Oklahoma City.
Sure.
Just because someone's going to pay him a ton of money.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's hard for me to tell. I don't know.
Yeah.
But especially because the one that I heard, and I don't know if this is true, was Gay for Campaign. And I just don't know.
Oh, you gotta do that.
I just don't know. The thing is, I don't know if you do. Campaign is pretty good. He's a lot better than Samaje Christian. And I just
okay. I mean, let me. All right. He either is not as good as Reggie Jackson, in which case he's worth trading for Rudy Gay, or he is as good as Reggie Jackson, which is going to be an issue.
Yeah, but he still has enough years on his. I just don't know. I just don't know. I want to see him come back and kind of figure out how he fits on this team this year, and how, if he makes us significantly better, and what. Because, say, if he is as good as Reggie Jackson, I think at some point there's going to be a trade that's a lot better for him than Rudy Gay.
I get that thinking. I was going to run through some ideas and see what you had to say.
Okay.
So first would be Gallinari from the Nuggets. He's getting pissed off. Moutier's not been good, and he does not like it.
Yeah, the one thing about the Nuggets that I think is that they're always talked about in trades, and I don't think they know what they want. So I don't think they'll ever make a trade. I just think they'll hold on to all these weird assets until they become free agents. But now, are you wanting me to say who I would trade for Gallinari?
Well,
do you have an idea?
I just wanted to see if you had names in mind, and then see what you thought about the names that I had in mind.
Well, this is the thing. I love Gallinari. I think he's awesome. I would love to have him on our team. It would be fantastic. Now, for that, because I like him so much, and it almost works out. Well, I don't think they'd do this, but pretty much I'd throw anyone. God, the trade machine is so weird. I just threw in Enes Kanter for Gallinari straight up. And it says that it makes the Oklahoma Hollinger's analysis -8 wins, which I don't think is that's correct. but this trade machine says, so you never know.
Yeah.
But Gallinari, I love him. I would love for him to be on our team. And the same thing with I like Wilson Chandler a lot too on the
see, the problem is that Wilson Chandler is like a great dude. And he's sort of their Steven Adams as far as like veteran leadership. Whereas Gallinari is like not happy about the direction the team's going in.
Yeah. I would I would love Gallinari on this team. I'd probably get a jersey.
So Gallinari is my number one answer because he doesn't want to be there. That's the number one reason. And they have to be thinking about moving him because his contract is also going to expire next year. He is what you would want from Kevin Durant, right? He is, you know, like a long distance shooter and he has that respect. But I mean, he's got a super underappreciated off the dribble game. I mean, he gets so much from pump faking like a corner three and then driving and getting fouled.
Yeah.
So
I would do. I mean, I would love him on this team. I'm a huge Gallinari fan. I know the rest of my podcast is as well.
Yeah. So I would give up campaign for that. And I mean, like Moody, I think that, you know, the Nuggets are looking for answers at point guard. Plus, I think that would be like Andre Roberson and campaign.
Yeah, it's I would throw campaign in there, but Roberson is
so important to this team.
He is. And so I would rather, you know, the dream with any trade for the Thunder is to include Kyle Singler in that trade. That's the dream because we're paying him a lot of money for a long time and he's not very good. So that's the dream, but I just don't know if, you know, it will ever happen. We might have to have him for forever. Yeah. But yes, campaign, I'd throw him. I really wouldn't throw Roberson out just because I like him so much. He's so good on defense and he's part of what, and I know, you know, he's not a great shooter. But I'd rather keep him.
Well, I mean, I think that the NBA intelligentsia since 2011, there was this, MIT Sloan paper that was the Dwight Howard effect that gave everyone a hard on for Larry Sanders way back when, you know, because it was like the seminal paper on rim protection. But since then, the game has like changed a lot more than I think people realize, right? You have to have a stretchy floor. You don't really have dominant post threats. And if someone's finishing at the basket, they're starting from the perimeter and then getting to the basket. So one of the best ways of providing rim protection is not letting the initial drive happen. And that's Andre Roberson, right? I mean, that's what the Spurs did last year, and they had the best defense in the league by doing it. It wasn't like a 50-year-old Tim Duncan that was protecting the rim so well. It was Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, like, you know, closing in on drives and just forcing people into bad shots. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Andre Roberson does that better than – I mean, he's really good. You know, he's really good at doing that.
Yeah.
I sort of want to – you know, I'm looking for guys – who I can move him to the power forward position. Cause I just don't think you need a lot of defense out of your small forward. If you can have like a 4-2 combo, with Oladipo's defensive ceiling and then Roberson sort of splitting up the court down the middle and, taking turns helping.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm all in for moving him down to power forward. For some reason, I get the feeling the team doesn't want to do that. I think, you know, I just don't think they have the same line of thinking for whatever reason. But I'm all with you on that one.
Yeah. That's really one of the best ways to do it right now. To defend in space. I mean, the rim protection stats for the Death lineup, are pretty damn good, and it's not necessarily because Draymond Green is the best center because it's hard for him to contest at his height. A lot of it is just because the initial drive is cut off always. You know, they switch everything and like you just can't get by. So yeah, I mean I think that Andre Roberson is you're not gonna get equal value. I think that he can I think that him and Oladipo are like a top 10 defense in a box going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is that he didn't sign that extension earlier this season. So, unless they have a really good feeling that he's going to re-sign with us. I think someone else is going to make him an offer for a ton of money. And he might leave. He might take it and leave. So
classic Nets move.
So because of that, you know, it now might be the smart time to put him in a trade and get him if you don't think he's going to re-sign. So I do see both sides of that.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we're just about done.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing, I guess, with this Thunder team is like landing back on the, you know, non-strategic, non-talent based value of watching an NBA basketball game. There's two teams that look like they can win the championship right now. So the most that you can sort of ask for is that there's something to go and watch a game, you know, like there's a reason to do that, whether that's young talent or, you know, the possibility that Rajon Rondo might like huck a towel at a coach and there's just drama.
Yeah.
Whether that's because it's just you're going to watch really good, well-executed basketball. I think the Hornets are like that. Or whether it's – I mean, the Thunder are really high on my list of must-watch basketball because, you know, they've responded to their, I think, lack of talent by doing a whole lot of interesting things. And then Russell Westbrook has responded to it by putting in one of the greatest seasons that any NBA player has ever had. So – I'm more likely to watch an OKC Thunder game now if I have to like make a choice between a couple of other ones than I was last year, because last year it's like you sort of knew what was going to happen. There was a script ahead of time. Now, I just think the Thunder are really electrifying right now, which was a joke that I didn't mean to make.
No, it's all right. They are fun to watch, and I agree that they're more fun to watch because last season when they weren't meeting those expectations, they were stressful.
Yeah.
They would stress me out and, you know, put me in a bad mood. And if, you know, if we won, you know, it'd be great, but it's not like, I don't know the way they play. Plus this year, I feel like all the games are closer.
Oh God. Yeah. So they're close against good teams and bad teams. It's weird.
Yeah. And it always has kind of been the Thunder's MO is that they play each team at their level.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's always kind of been interesting, but I like that because every team, every game that we watch, we're going to be in it, you know, and you're probably going to see Russ do just an outrageous dunk and scream at everybody, which is always fun.
And Russ is clutch for the first time in his career.
He is. And it's great. I like that.
We're far enough into the season, and it's worth mentioning that January is going to be rough. Probably you might drop below 500. We'll see. But like, I was already wrong because like I just didn't know what the hell they were going to do, and I thought it was just going to be gunky and terrible and awful. So at this point, I feel like it's not even like team record. It's that. You know, I assumed that they weren't going to have cohesion and that what they were doing wasn't going to like optimize their talent. And it was just going to be miserable. And I was totally off base.
Well, I'm glad that they proved you wrong. And,
I am too. Honestly, I didn't want them to be bad.
Yeah. But I appreciate you having me on so we could, you know, talk about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. So this is Luke Stevens, Down to Dunk Podcast. Definitely check them out. You know, there's a lot of great Thunder podcasts out there, but, you know, each time I have a, you know, Thunder pod, I reach out to, you know, either Andrew or Luke or any of the Down to Dunk Podcast guys because they know their shit and they're fun to talk to. So I appreciate you coming on and talking Thunder with me. What's your Twitter for the folks at home?
My Twitter is at Suk Levens, and which is my name with backwards, basically, or, you know, replace the first letter. And if you want, and I never talk about Thunder basketball on there, but if you want to see the Down to Dunk, we have at DTD Podcast for all our basketball information. But on me, on my personal one, it's just being goofy.
Yeah.
But thank you for having me on. It's been fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, I appreciate it. I'll let you guys know next time I want to talk about the next amazing thing Russell Westbrook does.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.